Hey everybody, welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
It's dark. I can't see it.
Exactly.
Welcome to the show. Holy moly, guys. We survived the Battle of Winterfell.
I'm not sure I did.
Episode titled The Long Night, which I thought was funny how everyone just called this episode the Battle of Winterfell. Or even like while the episode was happening on our Facebook, it was like, what's the title of this episode? The Long Night, I guess, is the official title.
Yeah, The Long Night, which is, it makes sense for it to be called that because, you know, thousands of years ago before the wall was constructed, that's what the battle was called then too, The Long Night. And that's actually a shout out to the prequel series that's going to come out at some point because that's what it's going to be called, is The Long Night.
And just for the record, Will Fry.
Yeah.
I like the way they filmed it. So there.
Well, so here's the thing. You know, not to get right into the gripes that people had with this episode, but I thought it looked fine too, but I didn't know if it was necessarily the way maybe people's TVs were set up, or maybe they had lights on in the house, but we have, you know, the Hue lights, and we had like this kind of blue lighting, and it was dark, but I thought that kind of made it, but it was still lit. Like, I saw what was going on, but it just made the sense of dread and the horror scarier, I thought.
When they wanted to show you something, they showed you. When it was just chaos, you couldn't, I mean, you all these, you know, when they're jumping over the wall, and everything, who knew what was being killed? But I go, the only time I had trouble is your mom goes to bed early on Sunday night, but she woke up and turned on the light, and I go, hey, I can't see. I was watching on my laptop, so I had to hit pause again to wait for her to turn the light off.
If you watch the behind the scenes of this episode, that's one of the few points I took away from it, was the director was going for three genres with this movie. I mean, this basically was a movie. This episode is that the first third, he wanted it to be a mystery, like a suspense kind of thing, with not being able to see the dead and just constantly being in the dark. And then the middle part with Arya being more of a horror. I know I never said that word right.
Horror.
And then
the horror.
And then the last, you know, bit, just straight up action. And I think that's what you did, because they shot all this at night anyway, and so it's going to be dark, and it makes sense for it to be dark.
The opening fight scene with Dothraki's, where they go into, and it's just a bright light, you know, all their swords going bright, and then it starts dimming, you know, going out. That couldn't have been done in the daytime.
No.
I thought that was a really cool scene.
Well, and I think Nick brings up a good point. Like, you had to do it at night. Again, if I was the dead, I would be coming at night, because the point is to, like, you know, also terrify these people that you're overtaken, and it gives you the, like, best advantage, or gives their, you know, undead army.
And the Night
best
King
advantage.
Is a little cocky. He's a little overconfident.
A little bit. I've said this before, and I know someone's made fun of me for saying it, but I love really good facial actors, because I think Harrison Ford is one of the best facial actors. Not that great of an actor, but just a great facial actor.
John Belushi was a great
actor. John Belushi. Yeah, exactly. And there's one very quick scene, because it's so dark, you don't know how big the Army of the Dead is. And it's the first time that
it's pretty big.
That Drogon comes by, you know, and they put the little strip of the Army of the Dead on flame, and it shoots to Sansa and Arya's face, and you can see it right there, just like a split second. The amazement, and you don't know if they're amazed at the dragon or they're amazed just how fucked they are, because they finally see, like, how big the dead is, the waves.
Well, that was one thing where you got, maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves here, or I'm getting ahead of us, is when you see these warriors, these soldiers, all of them, you know, both men and women who have fought in all these wars and all these battles, and they're terrified.
Well, yeah,
and they're just terrified. I mean, Grey Worm was just shaking in his boots. I mean, here's this guy; he's the ultimate soldier, and he's just terrified.
Yeah, and that's what I think. To me, the fact that it was at night, the fact that it just had that sense of like, and that's a great point to bring up, Nick, about how the director kind of wanted it in these three sections, and I think it did nail those three sections, because, like, to me as a viewer watching it, I was just like, come on, just, like, show them already. I can't take it anymore. And, you know, it putting the viewer in the, you know, the mind, or in place of, you know, these characters that we love and that we're watching, it, to me, is, like, when you're doing it right. And again, Colleen and I watched it again before we recorded now. And again, even then, it's just still the sense of dread, the that kind of moment of hope when is it Melisandre lights up all the Dothraki's blades, where it's just like, all right, okay, let's go, and then they're like, nope, that didn't work out too good, and then just the reaction shots. Again, we're talking about like facial acting, but the reaction shots of everybody that didn't go in that charge was like, and then you have that look of Jorah as he's coming back. It's like, no.
Yeah.
He was beaten. He was like, oh my God. Well, I think that was a great scene too. When they first get up there, they're charging, they're gung ho. And it's like, oh, you know, even they had fear. Which is like, you never see from them.
Well, 'cause you get a glimpse, right? The light of the flame kind of lights up that front line of the dead army. It's like, it's a giant's the first thing they see.
Yeah.
It's like, damn,
we can't win this.
Yeah. That was one of those weird things. 'Cause like you assume, especially from the later on in the episode, that Melisandre knows kind of what's going to happen. And so for her to show up, I did love the emotional play of that first opening battle part. Because you can see all the fear in their hands shaking and things like that. And then she shows up and puts all their blades on fire. And it does. It's like a moment of like hope of like, yes, we have magic here, or we have whatever. And then it just quickly just, no. But it made me wonder like, well, why did she do it then? Like, is if they're just going to go out and die.
Well, just, I mean, it
takes other than like a really cool shot of like being able to see like, oh, this is where they're at. Then they're
well, that's gone. What it was. It was a cool shot. And I think it set the tone, for how the battle was going to go.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you know, even I think I told Colleen when we first saw, I was like, well, if I was the general here, and again, I'm not as dumb as Jon Snow, I'm not smart, but I'm not as dumb as Jon Snow is generally, I would have like, let's just hold back. Let them try to come to us first, because we don't know how many people they have. But again, from like, to me, Dothraki don't seem the type of people that are going to like wait for them to come to you. They're going to charge.
No,
first.
They're gung-ho. And like I said, but you could tell when they got to that and looked up and went, holy crap.
But yeah.
But they said in Dothraki, though.
At 84 minutes, an epic movie-length episode. We're going to dig into as much of it as we can today. We also have some listener feedback, and I'm sure we'll have some nitpicks as well. Having myself kind of read the internet afterwards, I think in general a very positive response, but it's Game of Thrones, so there's going to be a subset of those people that complain about something. So, but to me, I think the
he's
overall
right
feel
here.
Is
he
positive.
He can hear you.
Nick is that representative, I think. But for Jack and I think we walked away pretty dang happy with this episode. But all that being said, we want to thank the people that make this show possible, our patrons. All of the podcasts on the Jay and Jack Network are listener-supported, much like NPR, much like a lot of other things. So if you enjoy what we do, head over to patreon.com/Jay and Jack. And we do different kind of things for people that give $5 or more a month or $15 or more a month. You can check it all out on our website Patreon website at patreon.com/Jay and Jack, patreon.com/Jay and Jack. But special launching the next week or this week or so, if you like Nick, he for a while now, since even when he joined the Married Man show, has become legendary for his crazy stories generally involving his mother or father. Dennis Pettit, one of our long time friends of the podcast, has produced and put together a series of episodes fully chronicling Nick's stories. And the first episode is going to be coming out this week for our patrons that give $5 or more a month. So definitely subscribe. It should be fun.
So the Nick Show? What was it?
The Nick Dunn Show, starring Nick and Nick.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I still think you should have been listed last.
Yeah, I was really flattered that he did that. I didn't know it until Colleen sent him to me, and I'm surprised he took the time to make all that. And I don't realize I tell that many stories until you listen to them all strung together and you're like, wow, I do. And I'm not being interrupted.
Well, Dennis might have done some studio magic to maybe reduce some of the interruptions, but still, definitely should be fun.
Part.
A fun thing for our patrons as a thank you to our patrons to make these shows possible. All right, let's dig in. We've already kind of jumped into this episode, so let's continue talking about the craziness that is The Long Night. So yeah, the Dothraki charge doesn't work too well, and I think one of the things that, or at least in terms of like zombie kind of styles, the World War Z styles like scares me the most, and that seems to be how they kind of take the weights. And again, Nick, maybe you can clarify from the book if that's how it seems in the book too. But where it's just this swarming, you know, almost ant-like or bug-like, and that's just what that wave that hit them. And it's such a, like, there's no beating it. It feels like.
Yeah, like this one in particular, like I felt they were going a little too fast and compared to other episodes where we've had hordes of these weights. It almost, to me, because I knew they borrowed a lot from Lord of the Rings for these last couple episodes, that the first time you see the wave of weights hit them, it felt like the Army of the Dead in Return of the King, like the green wave just like going over. And you're like, whoa, what is this? You know, and I was not expecting that. I was expecting more of the slow zombie-like army that we saw in last season, you know, up in the north, where they're overwhelming you with numbers. There's nowhere you can go. But I mean, I still enjoyed it a lot.
Can I ask, were they that fast when they were alive? Is there something that happens in the afterlife or after death, whatever it is, that makes you faster?
Well, no, I think at least, you know, if you're looking at if the Night King's controlling it and seemingly, you know, he was kind of floating off in the distance, commanding his
so he can army. He can control the speed.
Yeah, maybe he can just be like, you know, let's put this into overdrive. Because they're dead already. So if they fall apart or whatever, it doesn't matter. There's more behind them.
Well, he's got a million more of them. So
So
I'm used to The Walking Dead, where they just, you know, you could walk by them and they're walking, dragging their feet and stuff. So
pretty quickly, John's like strategy goes to crap when Daenerys sees her Dothraki army decimated, and she's like, nope, I'm getting in this. I think you had two dragons, have one stay behind for Bran, and then you have the other one just lighting up that army the whole time.
But you had a plan. Jon Snow, maybe not.
I mean, I think he's a great war hero, but I just feel like his plans are generally, do they ever work?
No, and that's where I think it's really weird with Tyrion being in the crypt. Because it's like you have a very good military mind that's just – you just said, oh, no, you sit on the bench this time. We've got it.
I thought that was a mistake they made, because I thought Tyrion should have been out there, because when they started the fire and they had the Ring of Fire and the zombie – I said, why aren't we doing anything to kill them? Why aren't the dragons – they're eventually going to figure out how to get across it. And I think Tyrion would have said, hey, we need to come up with a plan. There should have been another plan to go – I just didn't understand why we were stopping there.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It's like, why aren't you shooting them with bow and arrows right now while they're just standing there behind the flames?
Those giant ball tosser things. It's catapults. It's
those were in front.
Trebuchet.
I know, but you should have had some. I mean,
I think Dany was lighting them up. But yeah, I think, you know, again, if you're thinking strategically, you're going to say, okay, you have Dany. Just light it once they get to that flamed. Well, again, she got lost. So, you can explain all of this because
she didn't.
You can see them not shooting because you know they're
she got lost because she didn't stick to the plan.
That was with the retreat. So you know they're human. They still need to probably catch a breather, and they probably did that. And then with Daenerys, she comes in, she's lighting it up, and then, you know, the storm comes in and kind of blankets them. So, to me, and some people complained about it was kind of hard to see the dragons in this, but I think that was kind of the point to show...
That was the point.
That the Night King, like, had a counter to the dragons, because he effectively took them out pretty much, here and there.
To me, those are some of the most beautiful shots in the episode. We're kind of bouncing all over the place here, but
that's fine.
Because you see where, you know, when the Night King finally reveals himself, you know, John takes the bait because he's kind of like, come on, John. And then John, you know, flies up to meet him. And after why should I miss that? Because John sees at least the White Walkers there along the tree line.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's when they call the Winter Storm, which completely, yep, like you're saying, it took them out of the equation. But some of those shots, because you see, like, because of the Winter Storm, they have no idea where they're at. Because John's hitting those trees with the dragon. It's like, that's how low
he runs into Daenerys, too.
Exactly. They have no idea where they're at. And then, like, when they go high and they go up in those cloud scenes with the stars, that's some of those beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, those shots were unbelievably good.
Yeah,
I thought they were going to hold hands at one point, but I guess not.
They already had the whole new world scene.
Yeah. The George Lucas directed scenes.
Yeah. I love you. Mean it.
Stay on target.
But no, you're right. Those, I thought, yeah, once they kind of broke above the cloud cover, and it was very, it was beautifully shot. It also kind of said to me, was similar, not too similar, but you know, in the first bat or Tim Burton's Batman, where the bat plane goes up to the moon and then comes back down, but still, like, really cool shots. But the whole time I was thinking, especially when the dragons were going there, it's just like, okay, they all have those dragon killing spears. We're being a little too cavalier here with the dragons, but you know, that is what it is. So let's talk about, once we're back in within Winterfell and, you know, they start to, basically put their bodies in front of, let's go to Melisandre lighting up the trench. That was a pretty crazy scene, but I love that even then she's showing that she has value here, but Davos the whole time is just like, anytime he's around, he like has his hand on his sword. He's like, listen, I'm gonna die, chill out. But you think she'd be like, okay, let's take
well, go
ahead.
That's what I wondered too. Like, after she put the Dothraki swords on fire, like, is this like just her way to like get in the castle? I'm like, okay, I did something good. Let me in. You know.
But you saw the second she got in, he's like, and she's like, listen, I'm gonna die by dawn. All right.
Yeah. Just chill out. Yeah, we're good. Yeah.
But even end of the, when she's like walking out, Davis is there like running after. It's like,
oh yeah, with the sword.
Give her a chance.
Yeah. The her lighting the trench though is the set only the. There was two scenes I felt were Lord of the Rings-ish, and the first one was when the whites first hit, as I already said. The second one was this scene with Melisandre, and then it felt to me like the Helm's Deep scene with the orc coming with the Olympic torch, you know, to blow up the wall. And that she kind of had this – it was more subtle, but she got there and then like, oh, you know, and then that's like, oh, crap. Yeah, that to me, it was the same feeling of that.
Yeah, well, and it was so great. And then again, you look at, and what's the name of the not Valyrian army, but her Unsullied. Talk about the bravery of that army. Like, they're basically, they know they're all going, or you know, a large portion of them are going to die to save the retreat, which was incredible. But again, just the shot where you're just seeing the line keep getting pushed back, and then Melisandre is looking out and just seeing that it's coming. And you can tell she's starting to freak out because she's trying to light up this trench. And then she's like at the last second, like right as that, you know, when Wait is there to get her. Cool scene.
Another example of good facial acting. Exactly. Because you wonder if it's her not having the power, or is it, you know, the Lord of Light testing her faith once again until it actually happens? It's just great. Speaking of the Unsullied, though, exactly that is, and what Jack was saying about Grey Worm even being scared and being tired, you see that as they're retreating, there's at least 8 to 10 rows of Unsullied there defending their retreat, and then Grey Worm runs back behind the barrier, the trench, and then says, "Okay, you know, light the trench." And it's like, so he basically just condemned all of his men to death, and that. Yep. And I was like, holy crap. But I mean, I understand that's just what they do.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's their part to play, especially in this, you know, battlefield style battle, even though
I'm going to live. But the rest of you, that's what your job is.
Well, can we just say, you know, I think if I'm going back to our last week's episode and we're talking about who's going to die, our top three were Theon, Jorah, and
Grey Worm.
Anyone shocked that Grey Worm somehow survived that?
Grey Worm survived. But the thing is that early on, when Melisandre gets in, if she sets the Dothraki swords on fire. She even looks at Grey Worm and says, you know, Valar Morghulis, which is all men must die. And I'm like, oh, you're so dead, Grey Worm. Like, she just sentenced you to death. But yeah, I mean, I was happy he lived. Most of them, someone made a really good point online that the people who died in this episode, though, were people that are not invested in any way with the Battle of Cersei.
Yeah.
They're all people that were more associated with the North, or, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's there were some criticisms on who lived, and I was like, well, yes, if this was the last episode, then yes, but you still have to take on Cersei after all this, and I think there's so many more storylines. I think we talked about this last week, where, okay, well, Clegane can't die because you have Clegane Bowl. Right. Jaime can't die because maybe he's going to take out Cersei, or Arya may have to take out Cersei, or Dany may. So I feel like there's a lot of storylines that still need to happen beyond this battle where they would have to live.
The biggest complaint I saw was from people who complain about who didn't die on Twitter and Facebook. People wanted more of the regulars to die. I'm like going, well, like you're saying, you still have 3 weeks.
Show is that they've conditioned us to be like, not enough died.
Yeah. more popular people died in the Red Wedding. That's probably true, but
not really. I mean, it's only Rob and.
Well, there's what were more like redemption deaths with the, you know, you had Theon, of course, and.
Mm-hmm. And you've talked about Lyanna Star or Lyanna
Mormont.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Her death was amazing.
Yeah. It was so good. Yeah. And she had, I saw a little quick interview with her about it and how she was really, really happy about her death, because she was like, well, she was my character. If I'm not on the Iron Throne, then I might as well die. And she's, and I got a great one. So, yeah.
Well, she was, after the episode, they talked about her and they said she was only going to be on like what, one episode.
Mm-hmm.
But she was so good that they had to give her. And then after that, they said, well, we have to give her a great send off, a great death, and great.
Well, and she was badass. She was like giving orders inside the wall.
Yeah.
And again, the giant took her, but then she charges right back at him and then stabbing him in the eye. Just a really cool way to go.
If you have to go.
Yeah, if you have to, again, I think all the deaths were pretty kind of noble, except for maybe, is it Ed, the one?
Ed, yeah.
I
wanted to talk about that, too, because, like,
sure.
It was Sam in particular. It's like, Sam, why? Why did you
Sam's kind of the worst in this episode.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, you're not a coward, Sam. Everybody knows that, but, like, you can't fight.
Yeah.
And you know that. So it's like, why? You're just a apple tree. Albatross or whatever it's called.
Albatross.
Yeah. But, you know, I said my first thought was that Sam needs to get out of the way because he's getting people killed.
And exactly. And that's actually a part. I tend to chuckle at things that are just me, my sick sense of humor. So, you know, towards the end, when John gets in the castle, chasing the Night's King, because you're assuming at this point that John's going to kill the Night's King.
Yep.
And he looks over and he sees Sam crying on the ground, like going, like stabbing people left and right, you know. And John, for a split second, you can see it, like he almost wants to go help Sam, but then he doesn't fall for the trap.
That'll get me killed.
That'll get me killed. Exactly. So he just leaves Sam to his own demise.
Sam is a death magnet.
Yeah. So to me, that was just the part of my brain going, don't do it, John. You're going to die.
You know, yeah.
Like, do I choose left or do I choose right? You know,
he chose wisely, not poorly.
Yes,
exactly.
But again, I think, you know, he would have been better served in the crypt. So let's talk about the crypt a little bit. They kind of went back and forth through it. And a lot of people really love the Sansa Tyrion dynamic in this episode. You know, starting out with, you know, her saying he's the best husband that she had, and he's like, really? That's pretty sad.
but you think about it, he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he really was. I thought a lot of stuff was weird. Not necessarily with Sansa, but just because, like I said, I think the writers last season, this season, didn't really know how to write Tyrion, and they don't know what to do with him. But I enjoyed the crypt stuff. But like another part of me that was really being funny is that just his acting to when she was like, it never would have worked out between us. you know, and he's like, because your loyalties are divided. My mind immediately went to Dumber and Dumber, where he, you know, where Jim Carrey's like, so you're saying I have a chance, you know, and
well, and again, I think he even expressed what we talked about earlier, like he's a great mind. He could have been, you know, devising a plan. But I also see that, you know, the Waite army was just so overwhelming. Like, he wouldn't have had, like, some vantage point where he could have given out, like, say, you know, maybe the very beginning, but he wouldn't have been able to have been out of harm's way for very long.
But wouldn't it made more sense if his and the Sansa role would have been switched, where he would have been on the gate, you know, or up there at first, kind of going, right. Okay, more left, more right, you know, attack here. And then Arya go, you need to get down there now.
Yep.
Cause it's,
yeah.
It's
no, that was a funny line, though, when Arya gave her the weapon and she's like, I don't know how to use this, the pointy side.
Yeah, great callback.
It was a good callback to season one.
Yeah. I thought it was funny.
A lot of callbacks in this episode.
I hear what you're saying about Tyrion. Yeah, he, you know, where would he have, you know, been safe and stuff like that? And, you know, they do, if everyone had died, they would still need him to lead, you know, against Cersei. So, but I still think he would have been smart enough to say, hey, we need to be killing these zombies just sitting here.
Right. Did you guys, of course, it's after the, well, let's go ahead and get that. So when the Night's King, you know, raises the dead once again, and
I thought that was unfair.
Everyone like me, I mean, everyone, including myself, was like, why is everyone making such a big deal about the crypts? You know, it's like, you're putting people in an area with dead people, you know, and sure enough, all of the Starks that are dead, which I was a little disappointed because I was expecting to see like a Rickon or a headless Ned or something come out. And,
well, Rickon would just run Bean in a straight cameo line, right? Rickon would just run in a straight line so you could kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
Serpentine,
but,
you know, Serpentine.
It'd been neat.
But, you know, we didn't talk about that last week.
Well, Here's the thing that I did want to bring up as we're talking about the crypt scenes here. We talked about how cool it would have been if, like, the spirits of Stark's past would have come and helped them. But it was the complete opposite, where they become part of the undead army and just wreak havoc in the crypt.
Would Ned be running around without his head?
That's what I mean.
I think, you know, Nick said it. I think I'm in.
Oh, Nick said it? I'm sorry. Yeah. I apologize. Yeah.
I mean, you could have had, you know, I think Catelyn Stark's in there. You have,
Liliana. She, like, you know,
Liliana. Gives,
Daenerys the lowdown. Like, no, really, I'm his mom.
yeah, and
I'll
then,
admit it now.
Did you guys think the scene when Sansa and Tyrion are hiding, they kind of look at each other, and it's one of those moments where, like, I didn't know what they were trying to express there. It's like admiration. Was there a suicide pact? Like, I didn't know what.
I thought they were going to commit suicide.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I wasn't sure in that moment. What
you
was
weren't
going
alone.
To
a lot of people thought that. I thought it was going to be like, okay, they're going to go out and try and, you know, save people. Maybe go out in a blaze of glory.
Well, I think they felt bad because they were at that point safe, and everyone below around them was getting killed. So I mean, I was like, God, what are they? I thought it was going to be a suicide.
But they had the dragonglass pokers, so, I mean, they could have been helpful. I think they were eventually when they went out. But does anybody think, you know, I think Tyrion had to live here, but this may could have been a cool, you know, way for Sansa to go out?
I think Sansa could still end up on the throne.
You think so?
I think so.
Yeah.
I've been calling my shot for a while now.
I don't think she'll be on the throne, but
she wants to be.
I'm just trying to think of her story arc. Because her story arc is really just about being a naive girl to all of a sudden becoming a strong woman who doesn't need anybody. And she's kind of proven that now. So I was like, where else can her character go other than end up being just the Lady of the North or the Queen of the North?
Yeah.
Actually, at this point, do you want Winterfell anymore? What a mess. I mean, it wasn't that great to start out with. I mean,
it's probably going to stink for a while. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all those bodies. What do you do with them all? I mean, I don't know.
Okay, let's talk about Arya here. You know, we finally get to see her in battle. This is the first time we've gotten to see Arya kind of taken on an army here. We've seen her be more sleuths, you know, assassin Arya. But we had a lot of talk about her weapon, but she was putting it to good use till she got her head knocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an interesting kind of three-section Arya story,
yeah,
for sure. Because I think you have to talk about the Hound before you really get to Arya.
Yeah,
and that the Hound
And the Hound had given up?
Yeah, Beric Dondarrion and the Hound are really great in the episode. And at first, you know, like anyone else, like they're really hopeful. They're really, you know, kicking butt. And then I think when the trench got lit on fire, I think it triggered two things in the Hound. Like, one, the fear of fire again. Yeah. And then two, the fact that they're still there. And so he's like, oh, we're screwed, you know? Yeah. And then, so yeah, you have Arya, then just really, I mean, really impressive choreographed fighting for her. And you do, like Jay, what you're saying, like you saw the blade come apart, you saw it back together, you saw her using it really effectively. Like, oh, that's really cool, like what they're doing with it. And then, exactly, she gets hit in her head. But the same thing, like her being chased and Dondarrion pointing it out to the Hound, like it really snaps that loyalty father figure in him. And I liked what they did with all that.
Have you seen the theory? Because, you know, there's talk, there's theories around, I think it was last season, like why he joined this crew was what he saw in the light. And people are theorizing, because we don't know exactly what he saw. Maybe he saw that he had to save Arya. Like, they both seemingly knew, and Melisandre as well, you know, Arya's fate here. And I think you'd also argue that Bronn knew her fate, because he's the one that gave her the dagger in the same spot that she ended up, you know, offing the Night King.
But I'll get into that later. Yeah.
So it's seemingly they knew that they had to protect her. But I also was just really cool where he's like, it's death, we're going to lose. And he's like, well, she doesn't think so. And then you just kind of go to her, like, you know, sliding off the roof. And putting up, you know,
and the Hound goes, all right.
But then the shift to inside Winterfell, and just that scene where she's trying to get out of the library or whatever. And like, it was just such a perfect, and you kind of mentioned like that middle section is like a horror movie, and God, wasn't it? It was really freaking cool.
Well, to me, it kind of reminded me of Jurassic Park. You know,
that's
what it was like. It's like, oh, here's the kids behind the columns, you know, and the velociraptors coming after. It's like, but yeah, it worked. It totally was really good. You definitely felt the tension. As I said earlier, the music in this episode, this is one of the episodes that I really loved and paid attention to the music, and how, like, at the very beginning, you had this really subtle drone, just kind of a fear, and then by the time you get to the end, it almost was like Westworld when you get to the Bran Night's King with this really haunting piano tapping. And I was like, this is really good.
Ethan, who always calls into Westworld, who we don't like, but he said that that same composer for Westworld did this.
Oh, well, that makes total sense to him.
because I know I was listening to it going, and I'm just kidding, Ethan. The other guys like you, but I was I said, God, that sounds like Westworld. And it's not like me to notice music, but I noticed it just sounded like Westworld music.
Yeah,
I think he said that. If I'm wrong, I apologize, but I think I remember reading that today.
But no, I think that was really cool. Clegane does save her. You know, Beric kind of goes down. But saving her as well, and then you have
stabbed,
the scene
get stabbed once or twice,
like a million times.
Yeah. It's just a flesh wound.
Well, it actually kind of reminded me of, and there's been those parallels before to Princess Bride, where Manny Patinkin, like, you know, when he's finally facing off the six finger guy or whatever, like where he keeps getting stabbed, but he keeps going. But then she kind of mentions, you know, oh, I've seen you before, and you said, you know, kill a lot of people, and I have. And then she mentions the line, which she did say, well, however many seasons ago that was, you're gonna kill, close many eyes, brown, green, and blue. And, you know, looking in retrospect, she's definitely kind of giving the call, like, you got to, you know, take out the Night's King.
Because John can't get out of the. He's stuck. He just doesn't know what
tried.
To do.
He was trying.
He was trying.
Who's John King?
The Night's King. The Night's King.
Did I say John?
Yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was thinking the reporter for CNN. I apologize. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's another good callback. You kind of knew it was coming with... Because he did. Like, he saw the fear kind of overtake Arya during this whole library scene. and her, Beric dying, and then with Melisandre just basically saying, "What do we say to the god of death?"
Yes,
and that's all it took. You know, it's just for her to put her back in the right psyche.
Yeah, you know, she got in the right psyche, but I was like when they said on the after show they wanted you to forget about her at that point. I forgot about her.
Well, it did a good job.
I completely forgot about Arya at that point. I was like, because I was just John stuck. What's going to go on here?
Well, can we talk about another season one callback that Nick just pointed out? You know, what do we tell the god of death? Not today. So her original dance instructor taught her. Or that was the line that he taught her. So I thought that was a really cool. It was a really cool callback.
Yeah. It's funny. I didn't forget about her at all. I knew almost right then that it was going to be Arya because the fact that the emphasis on and blue eyes.
I heard all that. And I'm like going, okay, but I got so caught up in the other scenes that I just lost track of that.
Well, I think, and also the prophecy was also a bit of a misdirect, you know, the princess promised. And I know some people online may be frustrated that it wasn't Jon Snow.
I didn't scour the internet. There's people, I didn't see one complain.
Well, there's always going to be people that complain.
Oh, yeah.
We have one on our show. But,
yeah, I'll get into that later.
But to me, I thought it was kind of a perfect, and even if it's the Lord of Light, for him as a misdirect, because I think, you know, even the Night's King, he was pretty much only concerned with Jon Snow as the person that could take him out. So I think, you know, even if, you know, the Lord of Light, if he has, you know, an active part to play in this.
Hoping Sam would get off his butt and go do it, but, you know, that wasn't going to happen.
Theon had a chance, maybe.
Yeah, I wondered that too. Like if Theon had any dragon glass or something on him as he laid there right next to him, it's like, come on, did you pull something out of your pocket? Yep. You stab him in the leg or something.
Now why didn't those guys have any dragon glass with
them? He did. He had a dragon glass.
Oh, did he have? He did was, he?
Yeah, come
he
on.
He had a whole,
with.
You know, dragon glass arrows.
Arrows, yeah. I know, but what? What about a sword? Something. I mean, you know, that's the whole trap, right?
The staff that he had. He took out like 20 weights after he was out of arrows. Like he had a badass ending. Like he defended Bran much better than I thought he would have.
You know, it's funny because a couple seasons ago, we wouldn't have cared if he died.
Well, no, I mean that. I think I even said that a couple seasons ago that if I was an actor on this show, Theon would have been the character I would have wanted to play because he has the most. Yeah, he has the most interesting story arc of all the characters because you go from just thinking he's just, you know, Rob's little brother that's not his brother to this kind of whoremonger to a traitor to I hate you to you're a coward to – so you have so many – and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, now I'm starting to respect him when he saves Sansa to like oh, now it's a redemption story and then now he really does. He goes out in one of the best epic deaths.
Bran, you're a good guy.
Yeah. Thanks, Bran. That's all I wanted.
I can go die now.
That's all I was in this for.
I just sat there. I appreciate it.
Could have given me some heads up what was coming, but that's okay.
I love all the memes for Bran in this episode of just, you know, like cats laying down, not really engaged, like Bran in this episode. But a lot of great stuff out there for that. But yeah, I thought his whole defense of Bran and then his kind of his scenes with him when, you know, he wasn't off being a crow or raven. I thought was really moving. And then his you know, charge against the night. And it was funny watching it with Colleen. She's like, you know, if you're going to go out, going out by the Night's King, that's more honorable than one of those, you know, nameless weights, red shirt weights.
Which, you know, the Night King just kind of laughed. The Night King was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you're still dead, so no one really cares. You know, like that's what I would be like, well, it doesn't matter, I'm dead, Colleen.
But if you want to be remembered in history.
Yeah, you're the last guy. You know, you're the last guy the Night's King killed. It's you, okay? Like, you couldn't have waited just a couple more seconds, and then, you know, you're the last guy that died.
But again, it all played exactly how it was supposed to play to, you know, allow Arya to get in the position that she was in. Okay, so let's kind of talk about Jon Snow You know, he takes the bait, trying to take out the Night King. Basically loses his dragon in the process, but he does like take some chunks out of is it Viseron's neck. Yeah. So it was kind of cool when he was still flaming through the neck. That was kind of a neat.
It was
look.
A cool. The thing is, we don't know if Drogon, Viserys, and Rhaegal. We don't know if he's dead or not. Like, you assumed he was the way he crashed when Jon fell from him, that he was dead. But then I thought, once the Night King raises all the dead up, wouldn't that give him two dead dragons?
Exactly. That's where I think they're definitely still around. And, you know, if we're going to talk about previews for next week, I think we might have an answer there. But, but he's knocked off. And that's where the Night's King, he also is knocked off his dragon. And one of the big things, I think when we first saw that we had the dragons, like, oh, well, you know, just torch the Night's King. That didn't work.
That was one of my little things I really kind of thought was odd. Mm-hmm. Because it could be technically a nitpick. Because
he should have flipped her off.
Just stand there like, oh, yeah. Because Dragonglass...
Can you get this side of me?
Well, Valyrian steel, which is what kills him, is made from dragonfire. So that doesn't make sense to me in that, well, why did Drogon, Dracarys, you know, him, not kill him?
Well, we don't know for sure, but I guess their explanation was the reason why Dragonglass and Valyrian steel... basically kills them instantaneously because that's what they use to make him, right? Wasn't it a dragonglass dagger that they kind of shoved
dragon glass, yeah.
So I think that's more of it than the flame itself, but I think it also could have been just from a plot standpoint, that would have been kind of an unepic kind of conclusion, though everything going exactly as planned, right?
I'm just going from a logical standpoint. I agree that it would have been kind of like, oh, that's it. Okay.
it was a cool scene though.
It was a cool scene.
Just her look was like,
you know, maybe he has some spell he did before. I don't know. You're right. Like, there's something. I think you could nitpick that. But can I just say
thoughts on it later? But, yeah.
Well, to me, I was like, well, that's not fair. And then when Jon starts to run after him. And I was like, you could be a little quieter, but whatever.
Sneak up on him, man.
Yeah. Arya knew the right way. Jon Snow, not so much.
No, actually, Arya, her screaming almost got her killed.
No, because I think it worked because it kind of threw him off. I was like, no. But again, Princess Bride is like, actually, I'm not left-handed. but
I just thought, I said, God, is Jon that slow a runner? What the heck? Run, man.
He is fairly short. Got the little stubby legs.
Not very long legs.
Yeah.
But then once he starts to kind of lift up the arm, I was like, oh, that's not fair.
I said the same thing.
That's not fair. It's like, come on, fight me man on man. Yeah. Or, you know, like I wouldn't want to shout like, you're such a coward.
That's why I say he's a little bit of a dick. Because you see his expression.
A little bit. He wants to wipe out existence.
But you see his face. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to fight you.
There's some woman out there, though, that's going, I can change him. I can make him a good man.
But, no, it's just, I thought it was unfair.
Yeah, that wasn't fair. That definitely wasn't fair.
And then you think Jon would have said, okay, I need to back up a little bit.
Well, no,
just a little bit. Because if it wasn't for Danny showing up, you're like, dude, Jon is dead.
Yeah.
Well, that answer, does that answer Sam's question?
Yeah, I saw you post that earlier. I don't know, because she did it for love, you know, because she does love him. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's still...
But, you know, she still wants the throne, and he
still wants the throne. It's the same as if with Sansa, you're saying that to Tyrion about the divided loyalties. Like, even at the time of, like, their potential death, Sansa's still thinking about, I'm going to be ruler of the North, and you're going to be, you know, loyal to the Dragon Queen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's... So it's
I think it was last week we were talking about it. Would she have him killed? Would she kill Jon Snow? I know we talked about it.
No, we'll have to see what happens. There's still three episodes left after this.
During this scene, I mean, it's like.
But I think Nick's right. I think she does.
She could have easily let him die.
Yes, but I think Nick's point. She does love him, and I think she's been genuine about that the whole time. So while there is a disagreement, or maybe there's going to be some tumultuousness or whatever, I think she still loves him.
I was actually giving Danny credit there.
She's fighting this fight, and you know, one, because I think it has to. But the whole time I was saying, I was like, man, I really would have just tried to go south and let this army go to Cersei, because I feel like Cersei's getting off easy here. She really did. But that's we'll maybe discuss as we wrap up this episode.
Well, it's a great move on Cersei's part not to send her soldiers.
Well, of course. But you know, as then it becomes Jon Snow's trying to get to Bran, right? Because that's kind of what's, or at least in our minds,
well,
what's been set up.
We didn't talk about Dany's mistake though. Once she got Jon free, why was she still on the ground with the dragon?
Well, pretty quick. It was kind of a, you know, bang bang play.
She was kind of staring. I don't know. I think she was second guessing. Should I have saved him?
Oh my god. But yeah, so yeah, her dragon he gets overrun, but he gets away, and then Jorah comes and saves her. Even though, at least, but I feel like that's a great ending for Jorah. Like, I feel like if he had to choose how he was gonna die, that's
well,
how he would
die. I thought it was extremely clever too, because I always like it when I never like it when a character just shows up out of nowhere without any explanation of like, well, how did you get there? You know, and this was good because you see Jorah fighting within the castle, but you see him look up because he hears a dragon in distress.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and he knows something's up, and that's always his first priority is Khaleesi. And so when he just shows up to save her out of nowhere, you're like, oh, it makes total sense. You know, like there he is. And
her saving Jon Snow got him killed.
True.
Well, yeah, but I guess you needed to say, well, you would think you need to save John because she like cleared the path for him to get, but there was still a crap ton of dead people that also just got risen. And then also getting stuck behind the undead dragon. But I feel like it was so great because it was just setting up this climax where you are seeing Sam just kind of in a pile of dead bodies, like, please, someone help me. Anyone?
Please, sir. I want some more.
And then you have Brienne, Jaime, and Podrick just trying to stay alive, basically pinned against one of the walls. You have Tormund and I think Gendry, like, just on top of a pile of dead bodies, just like knocking them back. And it's just basically, it's your stereotypical, okay, this is it. Like, if you're not going to stop the Night's King now, it's over. And I think for a lot of us watching, possibly like, well, maybe this just is the end because Jon's not going to be able to get there in time, unless you're Nick, who already knows that Arya is going to save the day. And and you have this beautiful scene with Theon where, you know, he kind of gets his redemption and he goes after the Night's King. And yes, you would hope he had maybe a side dagger, because that would have been the time to do it.
What did Bronn say to him? Because he would apologize. Was it earlier in the scene where he said, "But it brought you here"?
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think you said it earlier, Jay, where he said, "Well, or it was Nick, where the Night King was distracted by Theon, maybe, and that's allowed Arya to come in, or everyone
else." Or
even
just give the time error. It slowed him down for however long it slowed him down.
So maybe that's why Theon was there. You know, maybe I don't. I'm just throwing it out.
No, because I think it's another one of those things where if he's seen it, and that's why I think he wanted to be in near what are those trees called again?
Weirwood.
Was it?
Weirwood.
Because and correct me if I'm wrong, this Nick, you're the historian here, but if they can see all of time through one of those trees, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
So to me, he probably wanted to be there because he knows everything that's going to happen in that spot. So he probably knew, you know, that Theon was there, that Theon would stall him enough that, you know, he had to give Arya the blade at that same location because he knew that she would be the one to get him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, as the Night's King is getting his blade to kill Bran, Arya just kind of, well, you see the little bit of wind wisp past one of the White Walker's heads, And I was like, huh. And then it was like, oh, crap, it's Arya. And then he grabs her neck, and it's like, oh. And then she drops the blade to the other hand and stabs him. And, you know, basically the whole entire army drops down, and the Night's King is defeated. And, you know, there's some cool stuff online. I saw there's, like, videos of, like, viewing parties, like, big viewing parties, like, in a bar, like a sports event.
Oh, yeah, they go nuts, yeah.
And the cheering for that scene is so cool. And, yeah.
I just want to know what she jumped off of. That's really why. Because she did, like, the Super Mario, maybe, like, super jump, you know?
Maybe it was, like, Theon. He still had enough to, like, just give her a boost, like a lift.
A boost, up. Yeah. And, like... There's a good meme I really liked of, you know, LeBron, you know, when he didn't get that that penalty call with his hands, you know, extended, like, what's going on? Like, it's like,
that's that's his, that teammate gave the ball up to another. He did something stupid. That's what the play is.
Yeah. And so that's what this is like. This is the Night King's reaction to all of his White Walkers when they just let Arya slip by, and then they're just standing there like, what good are you? I made all, you just stand there.
Whoops.
Yeah. But I think, you know, that shows at least the Night King's arrogance, and you saw it when he just raised all the dead around Jon, where I think he was probably so focused on Jon being the one person that could get him that he wasn't thinking that anybody else could, and even just, you know, what he did to Theon really quick.
Well, like the smile he has when he's pulling out his sword, he got cocky.
Like checkmate, and in that moment, you know, Arya took him out, and you know, Melisandre said she's going to be dead by dawn. Even though Davos is like, I'm just going to let you know, I'm going to kill you. She takes off the necklace and walks out and turns into a million years old and dies.
He goes, come on, man.
One of my favorite things the internet is doing right now is this like non-spoiler spoilers where they just show, you know, somewhat relevant pictures, but it's not an actual thing spoiling if you don't know what it's about. And the one they did for Game of Thrones was the scene from Titanic where what's-her-name throws the jewel into the ocean.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
It's like I thought that was really funny.
I thought they did Melisandre. Like, she was probably, to me, one of the best parts of the episode of just what they did with her. Mm-hmm. And I even her death I thought was neat because I wasn't sure.
It was a redemption death.
Yeah, I mean, they all were, but like you see her, like she knows she's basically her power's gone because as soon as she takes the necklace off, the ruby goes dark. Mm-hmm. You see her quickly become old as she's walking away, and I wasn't sure if she did like a Thanos and like she like went to ash or did her body fall because I've watched it three times.
The body fell, I think.
I'm still not sure though because it just looks
funny. So frail that I feel like it kind of seemed like it was ashen, but I feel like it was still just a very frail, almost skeletal body just falls.
Okay.
But you know, if the Lord of Light's purpose was to, you know, stop the Forever Night from coming, you know, it happened, and I think that's where she fulfilled whatever she had to fulfill. But a riveting episode, you know, was there things that you could probably nitpick? Absolutely, but I think in general, for me watching it at the end of it, it was like I ran a marathon. Not that I know what that is like, but it was just such an exhausting, thrilling.
I've driven 26 miles.
Experience that, you know, regardless of your thoughts, never have you seen something like that on TV before, and possibly never again. And on a weekend where also Avengers Endgame came out that also had an insane hour-long mm-hmm. battle with a lot of emotion and finality. It was just a really interesting nerd weekend that just capped off with an incredible episode 3 for the final season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I could also put Cobra Kai season 2 in there. I watched that yesterday, so I saw the finale episode. So
you heard from Jack. Cobra Kai season 2 is on par with Endgame and Game of Thrones.
It has one of those scenes. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Oh man. All right. Well, any other thoughts from you guys? I know Nick, you're going to have your chance in nitpicks and whatever.
Here's my. Want to go ahead and nitpick yet?
No. Because we have listener feedback too. We'll do that before we get into nitpicks.
My thought is, in the real world, you see soldiers that go through something like this. They're never the same. It's a traumatic thing that they go through. I mean, how do you recover from something like this? This is the worst thing in the world. You know, how are these soldiers going to fight again? How do you get the courage to fight again?
Well, if you survive it, and to me, it's just like...
But I just don't know. I mean...
I don't care what Cersei throws you. It's not going to be that bad. It's going to be a cakewalk in comparison.
I don't know. You'd be a little gun-shy going into battle after doing something like that.
They'll get the GI Bill in there, and they don't have to do anything anymore. You know, like, they'll just go to the nearest pub. They'll have all those cool bite mark scars, you know, on them, you know, and... You have a cool scar.
There's no way Sam fights again, right?
Well, he should have been fighting in the first place.
I don't want him next to me. And I like Sam. I know the Sam.
Well, the whole time I was like, listen, Nick said he has to write the book in the end, so he's gonna live.
He does. Yeah.
Okay. But you just stay here. You stay here and help build Winterfell. We'll go off and we'll take down Cersei.
Oh man.
I can't see Sam dying. I just can't.
Get a shovel. Bury the bodies.
And you wonder, because technically Sam is still bound to his Night's Watch vows, but since the Night King and is he now released from that to marry Gilly and have a kid?
Well, the wall fell. Like, is there anything to watch anymore?
Sure. One little section.
And who's left?
That's what I mean. Like, John. He's pretty much the only one, because John is no longer a part of the Night's Watch, and Ed was the only one we knew was still alive, and poor Ed.
Sam! Ed! Oh!
Maybe there's some red shirt ones left that wasn't really on camera.
No, they're dead.
Anyway.
There's a couple things, like Ghost. We saw Ghost, but I kept wondering, even though we know he survived, that was like one of my very first thoughts before the Dothraki even charged. You see Ghost there, and you're like, "What are you gonna do, Ghost? Did they put like dragonglass dentures in you or something?" Like,
no, you know those paw covers they put on cats to keep from claw and stuff.
Uh-huh.
They put dragonglass in his claws there. So I don't know.
His brother didn't do well against the Waits back when Hodor had to hold the door. So
that's true.
But he survived apparently.
Well, because he's smart. He goes, you guys, you got this.
I mean, a direwolf has to make it to the inn. He's the only one left, so. Maybe Ghost takes out Cersei for vengeance from killing.
And they train him to sit on the throne.
Sibling.
Nymira is still alive, too, which is Arya's.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
But she let her go. But she's like, you're your own direwolf. Be free.
Go, I tell you.
Let's
go into listener feedback. Nick, are you okay with that, saving your nitpicks till after feedback?
Yeah, because I only have maybe one or two nitpicks and then a good theory I want to discuss with you guys.
One or two nitpicks in an hour and a half episode? Man, you're
high praise.
To a lot of people's surprise, I liked the episode. Yes, there's some things that are wrong with it, but for the most part, I enjoyed it. It's mostly all action. There's very little plot in it, so it's nothing really much to nitpick about.
All right, before we get into listener feedback, let's take a quick commercial break.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback. We got some email, some phone calls, and then also I wanted to bring up some of the stuff from our Facebook group. Guys, what do you want to start with, the phone call or the email?
I'm going with the email.
All right, this one is from Maggie.
Oh, wait, no. Go with the phone call.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Nick. And this is actually from last week's episode. Wow, last night's second episode was so good. Arya and Gendry hooked up. Yes, that was amazing because she initiated sex in a world where women don't usually get to do that. I love the two of them and want them to live happily ever after. And then I remember watching Game of Thrones, so that's not going to happen. I would like to be invited the next time Tyrion, Jaime, Davos, Brienne, Podrick, and Tormund get together to drink. What a party that was. I really enjoyed that scene. I'm betting Nick didn't.
You did like it, though, didn't you, Nick?
The drinking scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was okay.
Okay.
Brienne is a knight now. That was so great. I cried. She had the biggest smile afterwards. I also can't decide who to ship. Brienne and Jaime or Brienne and Tormund. Below is my friend Nate's theory about the change in the opening from the first episode. They were the same in the second episode, which I think it was the same in the third episode. He gave me permission to share it. I think it's interesting. What do you think? During last night's interest against the bands, Around the Sun or the World of Game of Thrones were different. I'm not sure if they're changing every season along with the map of Westeros and Essos, but last night they focused on it on three things. The destruction of the wall by Viserion, the beheading of a Stark wolf by a Lannister lion, and a large dragon with three smaller ones under a dragon comet. One could argue this is the three major events for Game of Thrones, albeit in reverse order. The first scene is obviously the end of season 7. The second appears to be at the Twins building in the background, appear to be the two towers there. So the Red Wedding, the beheading of Rob from near the end of season 3. And third is Daenerys and her three baby dragons.
Or it could be the beheading of Ned.
Yeah, exactly, Ned too. Under the Red Comet in season 1. But what if these scenes are being shown in forward chronological order? The falling of the wall is the start of the season. Could a Stark be doomed to die, or at least face a major defeat when Cersei initiates a second battle with the Twins? Her hired army marches north, and they face off against the armies of the north there. And Sansa, Arya, Bran, / Jon could be in for a really bad day. And might just one dragon parent, Jon or Dany, live to see the return of the comet and hatching of three more little ones? Potentially bad news for Rhaegal and Drogon. Can't wait to listen. I'm not sure how I'm going to feel next week after the batter of Winterfell, but I'm not sure I'm prepared for all the deaths. Also, one more thing. When Jaime and Tyrion are talking about Tyrion's whoremongering and Tyrion says he can't do that anymore, does that mean he's in love with Dany? That's the only couple I don't want. Thoughts about that theory, Maggie's friend's theory?
Oh, about the credits?
Yeah, like, is that it very well could be just like talking about the past story, but is that something in the future?
A lot of this stuff is mirroring things that have happened. So I could see that. It's a good theory for sure. I'd have to sit here and think about it for a minute. But
see, Nick, what you got to do if you're going to follow the Jack school of podcasting, be like, I don't know. I didn't think of it, so it's probably not going to happen.
It's not important, yeah.
No, I think it's a good theory.
Which, be fair, is usually true.
I can't see Cersei, though, marching her army north.
No.
I think
she's going to let them come to them.
Exactly. Why would you exhaust?
Why would you? You have the wall. You have the. Yeah. You have the height. You have the.
No. You have all.
Yeah,
your
don't
home.
Be Anakin. She has the higher ground.
You have the home field advantage. You know.
Yeah. Agreed.
I mean, the comet does play a big deal. It is part of the prophecy and stars falling and all that of who will be, you know, the prince that was promised and all that. I mean, there's probably is a very subtle symbolism in those or hints in the title credits, but I'm not sure how serious we're meant to take it.
We'll have to wait and see. All right, let's go to our phone call here, which I'm trying to compare to Nick's phone number. Still can't verify yet, though.
Hey, guys, it's Nick. It's Michael from Los Angeles. Yeah, my name's Michael. Just calling in about episode 3. I really liked this one. I liked this episode. I had some issues with it, but overall, I enjoyed it a lot. I thought the strategy at the beginning, the battle strategy of just sending out the Dothraki horde, was a strange decision. I felt like splitting up your army to go fight the undead is maybe not the best strategy. I was surprised, like a lot of people, that more primary and secondary characters were not killed. I expected Brienne to die. I thought maybe Jaime would die. I had a feeling Grey Worm would also die. So that was surprising. I do understand that a lot of people were complaining about how hard it was to see. I do think it was difficult to see what was going on in some parts. But I think that overall I liked the chaos of it all. I sort of wish that it would have been a little cleaner. We could have seen a little bit more of what was happening. But I like what they chose to do because it just illustrated like how chaotic war is. Much like Battle of the Bastards did, it just showcased that for you to see it. And I'm fine with Arya killing the Night King. Like I don't have any qualms with that at all. So, yeah, super good episode. And, yeah, curious to hear what you guys think. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
I have a question. He got me thinking about the whole sitting there. What if you had the Ring of Fire out further, and you had your troops behind the Ring of Fire, and so the fire is keeping the horde from coming in, and then the dragons just go back and torch them left and right.
Yeah. Or
and if they break through that, then you have, because it was taking them a while to get through, and then they only had a small path to get through, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once they figured it out, then you get, wouldn't you have a better chance of killing them?
Or you do two Ring of Fires, and then use the dragons.
You see what I'm saying, though?
Well, here's what I'm saying. You had that forest out there. You have dragons. Just light the forest on fire. They have to get through that.
Wouldn't Bran be in danger, though?
No, not the one inside the – not the gods. I'm saying
fire spreads. I mean,
where they're at the tree line. Just burn the whole forest.
I don't know. I see California all the time.
Before they get there.
All right. I like my strategy better. We have the Ring of Fire out further, and you have all your troops behind the fire.
It might have been a construction issue, like putting it that much further out. Like it probably took.
Well, I know they were able to get it all the way around the castle there.
Exactly.
I mean,
that was tough. Maybe they don't have enough time to get it before.
Yeah. Oh, they had time. They had. You have 15,000 billion troops. They should be digging holes. I don't know.
We just established last episode that John didn't know what he was doing and didn't know how much time they had.
Well,
he had to wait for Tormund to show up and go, they'll be here tonight. And go, oh, okay.
Well, Tyrion should have had more input. I think Tyrion lost his confidence, I think, a little bit.
Maybe. I did like that he had
or
two.
Or have me there and say, hey, let's put the fire out further.
I did like that Tyrion had at least two very large casks or sacks of wine. I'm going out. I'm going out happy.
Yeah, my thing would have been to fire up further and have Sam nowhere near anybody that we don't want to die.
Yeah, I agree with Michael here. That was one of my.
Of course you do, Nick.
Well, it was one of the editing of this episode. I felt at times was a bit too fast. Because you couldn't see what was actually happening. It wasn't that much to me. I didn't really have that many. I did what like a lot of people did. I just turned off all the lights, and it was like being in the movie theater, and I could see just fine. But I get the.
But doesn't that add to the we talked about earlier, the chaos? It was chaos.
It does. Yeah.
They were trying to give that. Yep. That's what they were trying. I mean, I'm sure it helped the cost.
It did. It did
too. But I think it also added to the chaos. What was going on? It was just a madhouse. A madhouse.
But yeah, that's the way I choose to see it, is that they were trying to go for a, you know, death is dark and you don't know what's coming, and they're going for that just suspense of, like, what's out there.
Yeah, I think it did make it more dramatic, and it did make it more intense.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, let's go to some of what our listeners said on our Facebook group. Jana Picard Lewis said, what the F was Bran doing? And yeah. Our friend Matt Eichhoff, fan favorites, said, playing Angry Birds.
Why isn't Matt this funny on the podcast? just asking for a friend.
Let's see. Brian Hill said, what a bleak battle. So much to process, so many tears. Jess Wagner, damn, Arya and Theon. Arya rocks. Jess said, I actually let out a scream when I thought he snapped Arya's neck.
I don't speak Canadian. Can you translate this?
Justin Key says, I can't believe they took out the Night King. Ethan said, yeah, so much plot armor. I think
we don't care what Ethan says.
Everyone died by the end except for the name characters. Good thing the whites called timeout when they saw the name tags.
that was pretty good. Okay, I'll give that one to Ethan.
Arya, wow, that was amazing. How am I going to sleep now for him? It's not going to look good. Avengers this afternoon and now this. Yeah, again, like we watched Avengers the day before, and yeah, it was a emotionally taxing weekend for sure. If you
and again, stay away from Cobra Kai. You don't want the trifecta.
Oh my god. Rose says, my heart is still pounding. Sarah Mims, I can't breathe. I think a lot of people on the show couldn't breathe. Colleen Glatfelter, oh my Lord of Light, that was incredible. So yeah, just in general, a lot of good stuff. Okay, there's a lot
anybody,
of great memes.
I didn't see anybody
too.
Hitting it on there, did they?
There was a couple, you know. I think Ethan was the most nitpicky out of all of them.
Well, that doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's pretty normal. And then Angela says, "I need the Game of Thrones podcast with Nicholas Dunn stat." Sorry, not Jay and Jack. I'm feeling very whelmed. Not over or under. All right. Well,
So we're not needed.
No, we're not. We're not. Okay, but we knew this. We knew this going into it. I
need you guys.
We could have died at the Battle of Winterfell. That would have been fine.
It would be like, oh, nobody major died. Nobody important.
Nobody
died.
Important died.
Well, I think what would have happened is that one of you guys would have been in trouble, and then the other one would have saved you. But then that person would have died. You know, one of you would have been saying.
So basically, I would die.
Maybe. Yeah, because I wouldn't have saved you, Jack. I'm sorry. No. I got too much to live for.
No, what we're saying is you're the Sam.
That's fine. I'll be the Sam because I'd be alive. You can be the Ed. That's fine.
Yeah, I actually can hear you, Jay, being Sam. Just going, I don't want.
They're coming too fast.
I'm going to Tashi Station pick up some power converters. Anyway, all right. It is now time for the Nick picks, and what happens in the book stays in the book. We'll close out with that now. Nick says he doesn't have too many nitpicks, surprisingly, but let's hear him, Nick.
Well, most of them are really small, and we've kind of already discussed most of them. My one that's kind of remaining is just Bran, which is a lot of people's complaints. It's like, what the heck is up with Bran? We've had this huge setup that he's important, and I kind of think it's anticlimactic for him just to be like, oh, I'm just the memory of human beings. You're like, well, that's it? Like, what exactly do you do? Like, all you did in this episode was go, I'm going away now. And then you just flew around with the crows. I mean, could you at least done some recon, you know, and be like, hey, guys, they're coming from the right side. You know,
it's not his job. Not my job.
I guess not. Yeah.
Think it could work if he kind of set it all up to actually kill the Night King, like if that was his purpose, because he did set a lot of that stuff into motion.
It was his plan to go be a decoy.
Right. I think
he knows his brother, John.
I think Jay is correct in what he said earlier about him wanting to be right there at that specific time. And everything that he did, he knew was leading to that point. Everything had to go in a certain chain of events to happen. But it's just little things like after Arya basically saves his life, you think he'd have been like, yeah, Arya, or thank you, Arya, for saving my life. But no, he just sits there like a
He said, no, I'm going somewhere else, and rolled his eyes back.
I'm good. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
I'm going to chill with my crow homies. My chromies.
Yeah. What's up?
Can you just with Theon over there? He's still oozing blood. It's kind of gross.
He's stinking up the place. Go ahead and get him out of here. The other thing I wanted to there's one theory I want to get into you guys with and talk about in a second. But like this is a really major change though from where I know George R. Martin's going with the show. From what everything I've read and listened to other people who know said that you know Arya. Well, one, there's not a Night King or Night King in the books. It's just good. There's the others, and it's going to be because they don't want a Lord of the Rings type situation to where it's like, oh, I just dropped the ring in and that's it. We're good to go. They want it to be more dramatic, that in the book, which I could see, but for show purposes, no. Let's see here.
Man, if that's the case, I mean, like, how do you beat them then, you know?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, there's so much more to go in the books. That's what's, to me, sometimes this feels like lazy writing is that, oh, we're just kind of tying up the loose ends and just kind of giving everybody a quick resolution when you could. I mean, if the books were done, you'd have another probably 2-3 seasons.
Yeah.
But
I don't think the books are ever getting done.
No, I probably not. There was one thing I wanted to talk about, which was interesting because now that, you know, like Lyanna Mormont's dead and pretty much all the houses of the North are dead, and then you think about all the other lands, because we haven't talked about this. There's no ruler of Highgarden right now, or the Reach is what it's called. There's no one, the Westerlands, which is the Lannister lands. There's no one ruling that. There's no one ruling the Iron Islands. you have the sickly boy, you know, ruling the Vale. It's like basically there's no major families left in Westeros, and that's another one of those things that I'm really curious to see what they do in the end. Is like, because now, you know, because Danny had talked about breaking the wheel. Well, there's no more wheel. It's just everyone's gone.
Well, and again, like that's where, you know, I'm sure like there's some lineages still alive that could like take, you know, maybe they're like the 10th removed from the throne that maybe gets like, you know, so it's, the designated it's survivor in each instance is going to take over.
They're going to go with the King Ralph version of Westeros, to where it's like, you know, your American cousin's going to be the new King of England.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So that would be funny. Let's see here. Do I have anything else?
You think at the end, with three episodes left, they'll even they'll go there? They'll even explain it?
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's so much that they could go with that they didn't, and I'm always finding like. That's what I mean about nitpicking Bran, is that if we don't get some kind of resolution of motivation for the Night's King, or like why, other than like he just wants to wipe out mankind, it's like, well, what's the, because other than the creation of him by the Children of the Forest, we in the show, we haven't really been shown much. It's like, oh, there's just these dead people, they want to kill us. Like, well, okay.
Well, I think that's it though, because it's the classic case of, you know, the Children of the Forest created the Night's King, who then created this entire army to kill the First Men. And I think,
right.
it went far beyond what they probably wanted it to be. It's the classic case of, you know, somebody creating something and it becoming far more, you know, menacing than they probably intended for it to be.
Whoops.
Yeah. And we understand that from, because everything we've seen in the show, but I guess I'm thinking more like, if I'm just, you know, some regular person there in the Game of Thrones world, I kind of want to know, like, Bran is supposed to be the memory of, you think he at some point he'd go, oh, this is why this is happening, or
that's
whatever.
Fair.
He doesn't say anything, and that's what I mean. It's like,
you sit around, children.
But you know, he did have that conversation with Tyrion.
Maybe he gave it
maybe
to Tyrion.
Maybe he explained that to Tyrion. Maybe Tyrion will tell the story later
That would be interesting. Yeah,
because remember Tyrion said, we have time to talk. I'd like to talk to you, or whatever he said to him. They had a conversation, so maybe he did explain it to Tyrion.
Maybe.
All right.
I'm just trying to get it out here.
Yeah, I mean, I just want closure with a lot of things, and with three episodes, I really hope we get it, because I don't want to be like, ah. So something I want to talk about.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if you get the Cersei overthrow done next week, then it gives you two episodes to kind of give a full wrap up.
You think they'll get the overthrow next week?
Well, I'm just saying.
I don't think it'll be next week. I would put it at the next to last episode, so the fifth episode, probably.
Probably.
I mean, they got a lot of cleaning up to do.
Yeah.
Just burn them. Burn them all.
Yeah. So now that this is a book reader's frustration, not necessarily with me. Well, one, I don't think Arya killing the Night's King, because there's no one Night's King, I don't think that's really what her fate will be in the books. But now that this has happened, there's a lot of uproar of, is Arya Azor Ahai, which you always saw Melisandre and a lot of other people were predicting, like the prince that was promised. Like, is she supposed to be the new Messiah or the new savior of mankind, the second coming of this person? And there's the only thing that kind of comforts me is that George has always said that the prophecies are not meant to be taken literally. They're just kind of guides, or they're different for different cultures, because like these prophecies have been around, and naturally throughout time they change, you know, of like what people are saying what they are. Because like Thoros of Myr, according to the books, it said, according to the prophecy, our champion will be reborn to wake dragons from stone and reforge the great sword Lightbringer that defeated the darkness those thousands of years ago. If the old tales are true, a terrible weapon forged with a loving wife's heart. Hard me thinks that man was well rid of it, but the great power requires great sacrifice. That much, at least, the Lord of Light is clear on. So to a lot of people, that thinks like, oh, that's clearly Dany, because it's reborn the wake of dragons, and but there's no sword, so it's one of those like, okay, that's weird. And then the whole part of sacrificing your love for this. It's like, well, okay, well then maybe John or Danny will have to sacrifice each other, or maybe one will die in childbirth. There's a lot of things like that. So that made people upset that all of a sudden Arya did it, you know, to save mankind. And also because the prince that was promised is a, that term anyway, is usually associated with Targaryen prophecy, whereas in Asai, or I can never get that name right, is more the Essos version of it. So in the House of the Undying, in the book, Dany sees Rhaegar, her brother, at the time of the birth of their, even though he wasn't there, but like it's her vision, looking at what is clearly Jon Snow, now that we know that. And he says, like, he's the prince that was promised. So it's another reason why people always thought Jon was the prince that was promised. Mm-hmm. And then King Jaehaerys II Targaryen was told by a witch, you know, a few hundred years before, that the prince that was promised would be born of his line, which is another reason why he wed his kids together. Because it's like, oh, I have to keep this line pure then to assure that the prince that's promised is coming. So that's just frustrating for people that go like, oh, well, I've always believed it's going to be Jon that's going to be the savior, for all of a sudden Arya to, you know, be the one that saves them. But, okay. Let me get to one more.
But I can see it being Arya, though.
Yeah. Okay, so what's interesting to me, though, and I think this is where they're going to go with it, and Jay is kind of hinted at this as well. And what I was saying is like, well, why wouldn't Dragonfire kill the Night's King? And the dagger in particular has got me a real interest, because Azor Ahai created Lightbringer, which was this sword he sacrificed his wife in order to make. It took him a long, long time to make it. It kept breaking and failure. He had to sacrifice something he loved to make it. It is a dragon glass sword. Now, what's left of it, possibly, from thousands of years ago, could have been made into a dagger. And we see this dagger also in the book that Sam's looking at in like last season or season before. And it's the same one that started this whole thing. And that's the one that was meant to kill Bran. Bran acquires it. And then he gives it to Arya in the exact same spot. And that's where she killed him with. So that could be.
That was possibly a Valyrian steel dagger, though, right?
It's a Valyrian steel dagger. But I'm saying that particular blade could be Lightbringer, which is more powerful, supposedly, than Valyrian steel. Huh. You know, and so this is how I could see the prophecy coming true, that she possibly is Azor Ahai, and that Bran knew, that's why he is the way he is that he knew that everything was going to work out the way it was, but he had to make sure that Arya had that blade.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, just a little subtle thing I thought of with Melisandre saying brown eyes, green eyes, and blue eyes. Well, do you know who has green eyes?
Cersei.
So, I mean, that could be true, could not be true.
I was going to say Jay.
Oh, does he? Sorry, Jay.
Yeah.
I just want to hear you guys' thoughts about it. Cause,
yeah, no, I knew, because I'm in a group, a Facebook group. I think it's a pretty large one for the book readers. And so I read through all of their gripes. They like to gripe about things, but no, I think I like your theory, though. I feel like that is a good answer for it.
I mean, I don't see it that, I don't see anything that's happening in the books this way.
Yeah.
But for a show, I'm very satisfied with what's happening, as long as it ends nicely, it's all wrapped up, then I'll be like, okay, fine.
Yeah, and then that allows the book to be what the book is, which is its own thing.
Right, exactly.
If he ever gets to writing it.
If he ever finishes it.
He has, how many more books do they have to do? Three?
Well, he's almost done with this one, supposedly, and then one more after this. But let's just say I was 30 years old when the last book came out, and I'm almost 40, so.
Yeah.
Well, the last one came out after the first season of the show, right?
Came out just before the first season.
Just before the first season?
I think the book, I think, was published in May of 2011. And the show, I think, debuted in June of 2011.
Wow. That's incredible. So the entire show has passed before another book has come out.
Yeah. Because he was hoping to have the next book out, I think, by the end of season 4. And it just never happened.
Yep.
But I understand. It's the same problem he had. Because he wrote books 1, 2, and 3 basically back to back to back. I mean, he started in 1990, but the first one wasn't published until 96, and then 98 and 2001. So because he kind of had those all three as one stream of consciousness. And books 4 and 5 are basically one book as well. But he had to figure out what they call the Myrinese knot, which is how to get certain characters to where Danny was in the time that made sense. And that's why he ended up splitting them up geographically. So like book 4 is all about Cersei and things happening. And then the other one's about they're in two different locations. And so that's why people tend not to like book 4 and 5, because they're kind of weird.
Well, I know we talked about it before, but like I said, I would have no problem with him not finishing it, except that he blasted the writers of Lost.
Yeah, he did.
And so so if he wouldn't have said that, I was like, I get it. But when you call somebody out like that, and you have a show that is, you know, in books that are so popular, like Lost was, then you need to finish it, because you can't just go and blast somebody. And I know it happens all the time, but if you blast somebody, you better be able to back it up.
Precisely.
And that's all I'm going to say, George.
And that's Martin.
I'm calling you out.
That's why Jack every week blasts the Spanos family.
Exactly. F you, Dean Spanos.
Because he backs it up.
I back it up.
Anyway.
I'm consistent. So I did say on Twitter, I said, the Night King equals the Chargers. They always get cocky and choke.
All right. Well, that, I think, is going to do it for this week's Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. You can give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Calling time.
Nick knows that one. And send us an email to gamethronespodcast@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJackGroup. Like we said at the beginning, Nick's stories is coming to a patron near you. For our patrons, give $5 or more a month, special bonus episodes edited and compiled by our very own Dennis Pettit. Should be a lot of fun. I know Chris's reaction was fun on the Facebooks. So should be cool. A nice bonus for our patrons, and big thanks for Dennis putting those together.
I think Chris definitely. will just listen to every like 3 minutes. Will interrupt him.
Yeah, just every. Oh, I forget it's recorded. I listened to all 4 of them so far. They're really good. I actually felt I share too much with you people.
That's what makes them good. Yeah. Hey, before we go, I wanted to say something.
Yes.
People always go, hey, I didn't know you were still podcasting. We are. We have a whole podcasting network. You go on jayandjack.com. We have 5 active podcasts right now. The Broadcast, The Amazing Race, Survivor, Ramblecast After Dark, and Owen and Bruce is out there every now and then. So there's all these podcasts. You go on jayandjack.com. You can click on any of them and listen to them. I think they're all available, aren't Westworld and all the podcasts out there we have out there?
Well, if just jayandjack.com/iTunes will take you to all of our different podcasts. But yes.
Okay, there are 5 going on right now that you can go listen to.
Yeah.
And if you haven't listened to us in a while, go check us out.
Yeah, there you go. It's a good point for sure. But maybe they just don't like you, Jack, and they're just trying to be nice. Like, oh, I didn't know you were still podcasting. But like, realize like, oh no, I had to stop listening a long time ago.
That's okay. It doesn't bother me. I've got a tough skin now. It takes a lot to hurt me.
He says that, but then once we stop and hang up on the Skype, he's like,
I couldn't wait till I could. Like, you guys took a long stop. I'm going to cry myself to sleep.
Don't want to be all by myself. I believe.
Nobody did my stories.
I believe Jack and I think are going to get killed off before this season ends, but Nick will live on for the prequel show for Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. No, what we should all make it and survive.
Well, I might be like Jon Snow, though. I'll just come back.
Yeah, I think if we've made it this far, I think we can make it till that. So we'll see. Wow. Only 3 episodes left. We'll see you guys next week. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.
Valar Morghulis.